Station number 8939, Captain Ian Hamerton, Creon 9.
We've discussed the impact of enemy artillery and mortars. When you did your attack in support of the Highlanders, were you aware of having any friendly artillery in support?
I can't remember. No.
Now, you also mentioned that you had one man in the troop who didn't like getting out of the tank, stayed in it and so on. Did you have any other members of the troop who developed peculiar habits or other signs of battle stress?
Yes. On the landing, just before the landing took place on D-Day, the co-driver of one of my tanks asked for the rest of the crew to look after his revolver because he didn't trust himself with it. He recovered all right after that. I don't think anyone else in the troop suffered, except when we were bombed by the RAF at Centennial, when two or three of one crew did in fact run for it under the bombing. They all came back except for one who was missing for 3 weeks, and he turned up in the American lines and was sent back to England suffering from shell shock, battle sickness, whatever.
Was there any recognised procedure for dealing with people who showed these signs of stress?
I don't think there was anything laid down about it, but obviously any decent troop leader would keep his eye on anybody who was showing signs and would endeavour to talk him out of it. It was a great asset having one or more members of the troop who were always cheerful. I was lucky. I had a Corporal Welsh, a Scotsman from Pencaitland, and he was always cheerful, and he upheld the morale of the troop as much as anybody did.
What sort of things would you look for as the first signs that someone was not up to the mark, that they were beginning to undergo strain?
Well, if I can go on to the time when we were preparing for the Reichswald do. I know this is a little bit exceptional because, of course, it was the Siegfried Line, which already had a reputation, but also it was soon after privilege leave had been reintroduced for fighting troops. And I was sent on leave during the winter. I can't remember whether I was actually home for Christmas or shortly after Christmas for a week. I know that I wasn't very keen on going back because I knew what was coming, the Siegfried Line attack. But I know it affected some others much more, and some declined to go on leave because of this. My squadron commander refused to go for a start. He wanted to see the whole thing out first. And one or two of the older men were very reluctant to go on leave because of coming back. So, yes, that was noticeable. But, well, it was easy enough not to send them back. There was no problem. I don't think I personally had any dealings with anybody else who was showing signs of battle weariness.
Were you able to keep in touch with home by other means, by letter?
Oh, yes. By letter and by mail, by newspapers. We began to receive mail and newspapers very soon after the landing in Normandy. I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was very soon. We began to get fresh white bread. I know it's nothing to do with keeping in touch with home, but in a way it is. Very soon. And also showers. I think a shower unit turned up for a couple of weeks, maybe, after D-Day. It made you feel a human being again, I think, these things. In fact, the white bread, I think, was a very important morale booster. If I can again digress, after the night attack on the 7th, 8th of August, south of Caen, towards Falaise, we had come to grief with a broken track in a large crater, and it was necessary to sit out the rest of the night because anyone on foot was deemed to be enemy. So we stayed in the tank, and when it became first light, we moved into the nearest German trench because we were sitting target, obviously. With the mist rising and falling, we saw a couple of figures approaching. I challenged them and they fired at us, and we fired, replied back with a burst of machine gun fire. We dismounted a Browning, and a helmet on a rifle was hoisted, and we told him to crawl in, which he did. Turned out to be a young Hitler Youth chap. He got a bullet through the knee and through his back. We dressed his wounds and put him in the dugout. And time went by, and got to about 6 o'clock, I suppose, and we decided all was clear, and we brew up some breakfast, which we did. And then came a decision. Should we give him any? And there was a certain amount of discussion amongst my crew, and eventually we decided, yes, we would. And we handed him a sandwich of white bread, fresh white bread with bully beef. Up to that point, he had refused to say anything to us at all, but his eyes nearly popped out of his head when he saw that, and he was given a mug of tea. And after that, he was quite willing to talk. And we discovered he was 14 years old. And he came from Dresden. And he hadn't heard from his parents for some time. But I think the white bread finished him, as far as the war was concerned. It was incredible, the change that occurred. If I can just finish that story, because very shortly after that, the Polish Armoured Division started to move through us, ready to continue with the attack. And I went in search of some medical people, because this chap needed to be evacuated. And I found a medical half-track. Doctor said no, he wouldn't take anybody, because they were just going into action, but if I left him by the side of the road, he'd pick him up on the way out. And he sent two stretcher bearers. They plonked the stretcher down, and we got this young man out, and he saw their shoulder flash. And immediately, 999, he didn't want to go with them. Well, they weren't standing any nonsense, so they just picked him up and dunked him on the stretcher, rather roughly, and carted him off. I don't know what happened to him after that. I would dearly like to know, but he wasn't very happy to go with them. And they weren't particularly happy to have him, I might say.
How did you manage to communicate with him? Did he have any English?
An odd word, and between us we had an odd word of German, and it was enough.
You say he was a Hitler Youth.
Mm. It was a Hitler Youth division we were against.
So he was an SS...
SS, yeah.
Was raising a helmet on your rifle a standard sign? surrender.
If you couldn't raise your hands, I suppose he couldn't.
I think you said there were a couple of figures loomed out of the
mist. Yes, the other one we heaved a couple of grenades at. He got behind some dead ground and managed to get away from us, but he bumped into an infantry patrol and was captured by them.
Was he from the same division?
I imagine so, yeah. Because they'd taken an intense clobbering, what with the bomber raid, which preceded the attack, then the artillery, the whole, I think practically all of 21 Army Group Artillery, or most of it, took part in that follow-up rolling barrage. And then the night and the uncertainty and the sound of all the tanks, because it was an entirely armoured attack, flails in front of the four columns on our side of the Falaise Road, and tanks and infantry and kangaroos. It's one of the first times the kangaroos were used.
What sort of physical condition was this character in?
I don't know. He seemed to be all right. I think he'd recovered from whatever effects the bombing had had. I mean, he was in a sharp enough condition to reply to my challenge by unslinging his rifle and firing at me.
He didn't look undernourished or anything like that?
No, not particularly.
To return to the main line of the story.
Yes, sorry.
What happened to you then after you'd been in support of the Airborne Division? How long were you with them?
As far as I remember, it was several days. And then we were recalled
back to
Cresson, I imagine. And from there, we took part in support of all sorts of operations. We were constantly dashing off to support this attack or that attack, usually coming back to Cresson to refuel, rearm, and carry out maintenance, and sometimes going from one attack to another. Now, we weren't always used in these attacks. We were usually under command of an infantry battalion or something like that. We were still working in troops, and maybe we would be called forward, maybe we wouldn't. Maybe we'd be used as gun tanks, maybe we wouldn't. You were constantly going into action, but also constantly being held back in case. And it was quite a wearying business. We took part in the attack on Sher. I can't remember the name of the operation now, but that was not a very nice one. We were told to stay with the battalion, told to stay with the battalion headquarters, and we were on quite a high knoll, pretty bare, a few apple trees about, and no cover whatever, in fact. And this is when one of the armoured brigades, I think, took part on the right-hand side of the main attack and separate to it. And I can remember we had greatest difficulty distinguishing whether they were enemy Panthers or whether they were our own tanks. And in fact, we did fire some shots at them, but it turned out that they were our own. But at the same time, they were passing the other side of a wood in the valley below us, from which we were continually getting shots. My troop sergeant, for instance, was looking through his periscope. We stayed within the tanks, on this knoll, and my troop sergeant saw a tracer shell coming straight for him, and it bounced off the turret right in front of his periscope, and he had the mark on the turret to prove it. We had about 3 bogey wheels damaged by shots passing through them, and we replied with both HE and machine gun. And it was while we were in the middle of one of these fusillades that a scout car drew up right behind me, and Brigadier summoned me to him. "What the hell are you wasting all this ammunition for?" See, and at that moment a shot came through the carrier just a few yards away and set it ablaze, and he turned round and departed hastily.
Without completing his
inquiry. Also at this spot, a rather an amusing incident occurred, at least I found it amusing. We'd started the attack at first light, and by about midday we'd been in the tanks all the time, and with this silly sort of nonsense going on outside. And I got an agonised call from my driver. "Can I get outside the tank? I must relieve myself. I'm busting." So at that moment, I was just about to say, well, yes, but a gunner left, burst in the wood again. So I said to the driver, "I'm afraid you can't get out at the moment." I said, "I'm busting. Pass me a shell case." So we passed him a empty 75 case, which he dutifully filled, passed it through the turret to the operator. "What shall I do with this?" So I said, "Well, open your gun port and shove it out, pour it out there," which he did. Agonised cry from the driver, because the turret was traversed, so the gun port was immediately over his hatchway.
So he got his own back.
But it does illustrate one of the problems one has. However, we survived.
Was that the standard solution to being?
Yes, I think so.
What was actually happening at Sher? What was the objective of the attack?
Ooh, now you're asking me. I think it was intended to cut the Combayeur Road, and I think it was the idea for the Armoured Division or the Armoured Brigade to go on and get down to the Odon, they didn't get as far as that. It was a very sticky time around that part of the world.
What could you actually see from your rather bare knoll? What was the terrain in front of you like?
Oh, it was ahead of us was the ridge with a line of poplar trees along the road, which was the first objective. Between that and where we were, there was a sort of gentle valley with cornfields. There was this wood on the right further down, and I remember the infantry sort of wading sort of chest high through the corn, because it was pretty high by that time of the year. I can't remember whether it was then or whether it was at a subsequent attack beyond Sher, when we ran into a lot of minefields and we were called upon to flail. I think it was a subsequent attack. And there were a lot of mines planted along in the corn and a lot of defenders. And I remember seeing dead Germans and dead British troops within a yard of each other in the corn. One of the troop blew up on a mine, and another tank going to his rescue from the other side of the minefield also blew up, so it became necessary to prod the mines by hand. I think I've told you this one before.
I think you went prodding with bayonets, didn't you?
Prodding with bayonets, and we discovered a new sort of telemine we hadn't met before. Anyway, we were... A Fokker Wolf came over, I remember, and we dived under the tank and then realised I hadn't cleared under there.
What sort of formation would the infantry use for going through that sort of...
Very open.
It would just be a skirmish line, would it?
Yes. Yeah, very open line. There's some photographs of them doing it, and it shows tanks and infantry, Churchill's and infantry, spread right out. It was very open, apart from the corn.
When you were in that attack at Sher, were you being used as gun tanks, or were you being held in reserve?
We were held in reserve for flails. I remember we started the attack first light, and there was a terrific artillery barrage, and as it moved forward and we moved forward, we gradually ran into it, and they were crashing on us, which wasn't very pleasant.
What sort of speed would you be going then if you were just moving forward?
Well, at infantry speed. At that point, anyway.
When you were called forward to be held in reserve for clearing mines, and then you weren't actually put to flailing, did you feel a sense of relief or a sense of frustration?
Relief. I think by this time we'd all realised there was no point in sticking your neck out, and if we weren't wanted, jolly good. I think that was the general feeling.
And you say that most of these attacks were day trips up from Cresseron, and you'd be back.
Quite a lot of them were, yes. Sometimes we'd be out for several days.
How did you actually get to and from the battlefield? Did you just go on your own tracks?
We were not allowed to use the roads. We had to use special tracks across the fields. I mean, the roads were just getting pounded to smithereens. But of course, quite a lot of the weather in June and July was extremely dry, and these tracks across the fields soon became dust baths. We all acquired a piece of parachute silk very early on, which we used rather like John Wayne. And I was usually leading tank, and I was all right, but for the poor blighters behind, they were covered in dust. Dust was a terrible enemy.
Did you do any night attacks?
The only night attack we did do was the one from the southeast of Caen, Operation Totalize, 7th, 8th of August. And that was a whopper. That had, well, I mentioned already about the fact that it was all on tracks, no one on their feet, except for the follow-up wave, when the infantry had their braces painted white on the back so they could be seen from behind. I remember the password was Harry Lauder, for some curious reason, and it was also the time when Monty's Moonlight was used. I don't think it was the first time, although I thought it was the first time it had been used, but I believe since that it was used before. Shining onto the low clouds, and also Bofors gun firing bursts of tracer every minute or whatever on the axis of advance, along the axis of advance, so we could keep direction, because it was totally impossible with the dust from the bombing and from the guns to see. My corporal's tank was in front of me. We were in the front of the column, and he had his rear pinpoint red lights on, but we couldn't see him, and we were bumping him with the jib, and we still couldn't see him. And in the course of the night, he wandered off to the left. We went on. We got stuck in a crater. They were supposed to have been using anti-personnel bombs, but this was a whopping great crater, and in trying to reverse out of it, the track broke. And that's when we had the business with the German soldier the next morning. Horrible night that was. I've never forgotten that. With as the light grew and the mist rose and fell, you saw all sorts of things everywhere, and they just didn't exist, in fact. And I found my corporal's tank. I think it was found 3 days later, and I saw it about 4 days later. And they'd all been killed. Two of them, or perhaps three of them, trying to get out of the turret. They were just cut down, and there were bits of flesh dangling all over the place. And the driver and the co-driver didn't get out at all. Of course, all the ammunition went up, and all that was left of them was from the waist down. And it was not a pretty sight. My squadron commander had forbidden me to go and see it, but I felt I had to. The SP that caught them had also been knocked out, I'm glad to say.
Must have had a rather bad effect on the state of morale to see a thing like that.
Well, the rest of my troop didn't see it.
They didn't?
No. I didn't tell them all the details. In fact, I don't think I've ever told anybody all the details until now. Strangely enough, when I went back there in 1947, the tank was still there with the scrap metal markings on it, and I found a sock with foot bones in it still there, which shook me.
And how far away was the SP? Had they just run into it in the dark?
No, it was about, I suppose, 70, 100 metres. I have a picture of the two. My corporal's tank had blown up on a minefield and was stuck, of course, and the SP probably knew exactly where it was, saw where the flame or smoke was coming from. I don't know at what time it had come to grief, but I should think it was during the night.
You mentioned the Monty's moonlight.
Mm-hmm.
Did that produce an acceptable level of visibility when you were outside your own dust cloud?
Yes, it did. If there were low clouds, because it was shone onto the underside of the clouds, it was remarkable.
How far could you see with it? Was it?
Honestly, couldn't tell you. It didn't give you the same sort of effect as street lights do.
Be more diffused.
But much more diffused, yes. Just enough to see where you were going, really, rather than distinguishing many individual objects. And of course, the further you got away from it, the less effect it had. Whether they brought the CDLs up forward or not, I don't know. Because they were from, I understand, from the CDL tanks.
Mm.